He dipped his writing instrument in some black substance, and he began to write in his diary. He's the only one of the prophets that did not write on behalf of God. He was writing in his diary. He was recording his perplexity and his confusion with what God was doing in his times. God had selected an unusual people to discipline Israel, and so Habakkuk is writing that. We can find Habakkuk chapter number 1 and verse number 1. It says it's actually his burden. Happiness is setting by somebody who knows where Habakkuk is. It's 5 books before the Old Testament. So you'd go to Matthew and go back 5 books into the Old Testament. It's only 3 chapters long, but it's full of the heart of a guy that loved God and wanted to know what was going on in his world. When I started reading this the other day, I said, I feel that way with our country. I feel that way with our world and what is going on, the perplexity that's there. And chapter number 1, verse number 1, the burden of Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear, even cry unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save? Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment does ever proceed. And so those first 4 verses are really his document as he tells God that he's perplexed, he's confused. I like that phrase, confused as a termite in a yo-yo. I don't know if a prophet would be that way, but he's certainly perplexed. And we could be that way, couldn't we? One day things are going great, and it looks like the economy is going to flourish. And really, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent, the fact of the matter is, our world is in deep trouble, isn't it? And you don't have to be a mental heavyweight to figure out, when you read these first 4 verses of Habakkuk, it's the burden that all of us carry for our country. I was listening to some guy talk the other day, and he was saying that the real enemy of America is the Christian nationalists that believe that God has a place in their life. And then this fool went on, and I did use that in the most serious way, went on to say the real danger to America are guys and women that read the Bible and believe in a literal interpretation of the Bible. I didn't finish his article. But the fact of the matter is, that's our world right now, a pushback. Whether we want to blame it on wokeism or whatever's going on, our world is really in difficulty. You may remember Judge Bork that was rejected from the Supreme Court somewhat because of his beliefs in 1996, 97, 98. He wrote this famous book, Slouching Toward Gomorrah. Well, you don't have to slouch toward Gomorrah any longer, do we? It must have been that when Lot moved into Sodom and Gomorrah, it looked like a wonderful place to live. In fact, he selected that because Abraham said, you get first choice in this. We're not going to flip a coin. You get first choice. And the Genesis account says that Lot saw the well-watered plains of Sodom and Gomorrah, and he selected that. Later on, we find out in 1 Peter that the people in Lot actually vexed his soul. We're in the world, but not of the world. Isn't that the truth? Somebody said that the believers have started looking more like the world than we should. I heard some guy say the other day that if Jesus preached the same gospel that some of us preach, they had never crucified him. And there may be some truth to that. We've got this soft, squashy, let's not hurt anybody's feelings. Some lady told me in church about 4 or 5 months ago, she said, look, when I come to church, if you have something you need to say to me, would you take me to one of the ante rooms on the side and tell me, do not tell me in front of the whole congregation. Now, she is saying that tongue in cheek, of course, but the fact of the matter is, we're so afraid of offending people that we've stopped preaching the Word and declaring the whole counsel of God. We've had guys that have unhooked from the Old Testament and guys that have decided, I don't want to preach that side of the law. And so in verse number 3, I want you to see it. His perplexity is simply this. Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that rise up strife and contention. Now, I want you to look at verse number 4. If you have a pencil, put a little 1, 2, 3, 4 down. First of all, he says, therefore. And as you know, theologians, the therefore is therefore. And so he says in verse number 4, the law is slack. That is, the law is ignored. You think about where our country is. We've set aside the Constitution. We've decided that the Constitution, do you remember the guy in the 1950s on the Supreme Court that said that the Constitution of America is a living document, and so it means what we say that it means on Monday morning because it's a living document, and now then we've tried to do that with the Bible, haven't we? We've said this really doesn't mean what it says. We've asked AI to rewrite the Bible so that we'll have a nice feel-good relationship with what is going on. Would you stick a card in Habakkuk? And would you go all the way back to Ezekiel chapter number 22, I hope it is, and about the middle of the chapter, Ezekiel chapter number 22, and I think it's about verse number 25. Now, Ezekiel, little timeline. Habakkuk is writing about 612 B.C. The southern kingdom is going to go into captivity about 25 or 26 years later in 586 B.C. And Ezekiel is that guy, if you remember, that went into captivity with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel. He is writing from captivity. Don't forget that. And as he looks back on his homeland that is now in that will soon be in captivity, he says in verse number 23, you got to get this because he said, the word of the Lord came to me saying, and then here it is, verse 24, the son of man, say to her, that is to Israel, thou art the land that is not cleansed nor rained upon in the day of indignation. And then here's his thesis for the first four or five verses. Verse 25, there is a conspiracy of her prophets in the land thereof. Verse number 26, her priests have violated my law and have profaned my holy things. Verse number 27, the princes in the midst thereof are the wolves ravening in the prey to shed blood and to destroy souls to get dishonest gain. And her prophets have dabbed them with untempered mortar. So he simply says, listen, we've got a whole group of leadership, political leaders, that have decided that they know better than God does and what he should do in relationship to that. If I hear one more politician say, this is what the American people want, I just want to slap them. Because that they don't know, that they don't pay attention, because they're politicians. My grandfather said, politic is made up of two words, poly being many and tick meaning bloodsucker. I said, grandfather was wise. And so, but the bottom line, I think, on this is when we go back to Habakkuk, he simply says, listen, the law of God, verse number 4, he says, judgment doth never go forth. That is, the law is actually ignored. And it is, whether we want to admit that or not. The second phrase that he gives us in verse number 4, it does never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous. Let me go back and get the other phrase. And judgment doth never go forth. So he says the law is ignored, verse number 4. And then he says justice is never upheld. And again, you don't have to be a mental heavyweight to figure this out, do you? And then the third phrase, he says the righteous are compassed about with the wicked. And again, you could just look around our world. There's a pushback. Now, you know, as believers, we have to be careful here, because the fact of the matter is the world have always despised what we represent in our relationship with God. They were called Christians first at Antioch, and they did not say that because they wanted a discount at the cleaners. They said that because they were going to take them out and execute them. When they found out that the first deacon, one of the first deacons, James, was actually a believer, they bit him with their teeth, they stoned him, and the guy that held their coats was a guy named Saul, that's later on going to be called Paul. They were always despising us. Somebody said that we were looked at as an extreme side of culture when we started, and now, or around the world, but especially in America, we're looked at as some kind of extreme culture. Is that right? Now, I don't want to feel sorry for myself. I want to be able to say, listen, I want to be able to clearly give the gospel out. It's tough to do that, isn't it? Kay and I were at the Cracker Barrel a year or so ago, and we were witnessing to somebody. It was after lunchtime, and there was just a few people there. And so some lady got up after we had witnessed to this person about trusting Christ as their personal Savior, and she came over and said, I couldn't help but hear what you're saying. That's not a bad message. Well, thank you. But the thing is, we look for the world's approval in what we're doing. And Habakkuk's going to say, listen, I'm confused. I'm perplexed. I don't know what you're doing. Have you looked at who's going to come in and judge us? It's the Babylonians. It's the Iraqis, the Iranians, and the Pakistanians. They were called Persia in this particular time. He said, have you looked at those guys? They are bloodthirsty. They cut heads off. They remove all of the flesh from them. They put them in the corner. Sometimes they'll use them as drinking cups when they put their fingers in the eyeballs and in the nose sockets. And so they're the most vile, vicious, vulgar people that you could ever imagine. They worship idols. They're doing things that are on the dark side of the world. Have you looked at them? And then God gives him an answer. Verse number 5. Have you ever been confused as to what God's doing in your life? Surely you have. Surely you're not so arrogant and so full of yourself that you don't understand that God sometimes does some things in the background of our life that we can hardly comprehend. And so in verse number 5, still journaling, he says, here is God's response to what I'm saying. Now, you'll never see in Habakkuk's 3 chapters, you'll never see Israel responding. You'll never see him talking to Israel. It is just Habakkuk and God, as they spend some time together. And so he says in verse number 5, behold, ye among the heathen, and regard and wander marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it were told unto you. That's not a bad message, is it? You're complexed, you're perplexed, I should say, but God has a plan. I want you to turn the page and go all the way over. Still chapter number 1. Still talking about what is the response of God. And so they shall come to violence. Verse number 9. They shall scoff at the kings and the princes. Shall be a scorn unto them. And then in verse number 12. Habakkuk steps back on the only thing that he has confidence in. And that's his in relationship with God. And so in verse number 12. He gives us 5 points that I'm just going to read to you because they're so significant in our life. Do you realize that God is the sovereign of the universe? Write that down someplace. Number 2, God has a plan for your life and for my life. Write that down. And number 3, God's plan for your life is in your best interest. Now, Habakkuk's going to sort all of this out in perplexity and questioning exactly. But what is going on in my life that you have allowed these guys to come in? Could I stop in the narrative long enough to remind you that when America goes through difficulty, every believer is going to go through difficulty also. Is that right? If you haven't noticed, there's a thing out here called inflation. If you haven't noticed, gas prices affect believers and unbelievers alike. It rains on the just and the unjust. And so the just and the unjust pay the same price for gas, the same price for hot dogs, the same price for hamburgers. We pay the same price. So there's an effect that's going on. So Habakkuk says, listen, I want you to know I'm going to step back to something that I understand, and that's the nature and character and sovereignty of God. And so in verse number 12, he says this, art thou not from everlasting? God was here when it started, and he'll be here when closing time happens. In fact, he says someplace in the Revelation that a tall, bright angel, I see him out on the Atlantic Ocean, is going to put 1 foot in the Atlantic and 1 foot over by Savannah, Georgia. He's going to take the keys from his sash and say, guys, it's closing time. So he simply says God is actually everlasting. He does not change like you and me change. Now, if you heard this story, you can get up and leave. But I have to tell you this personal story from Kay and my ministry over the years. We worked with the same guy for 15 years by the name of A.V. Henderson. We were in 3 churches together. The last church we were in was Temple Baptist in Detroit. I think they had 18 or 19,000 members. I did the music and the radio and television. We were on at 7:30 Saturday night, just before the hockey game. It was, we had the best slot in all of the world. And so, because I was the music director and did some of the stuff, I was on television almost every week. And, or I would be helping open the program, but people would see you. And so they would see me in the mall sometimes. I was 29 or 30. They would see me in the mall and they would come up to me and say, has anyone ever told you that you look just like William Shatner from the Starship Enterprise? Now, it's hard for you to believe that tonight, but in those days, I was 30. I was good. I was actually cute when I was 30. I was at the height of my good looks. It was an ugly good look, but I was there. And so I said, I never thought about that. And so later on, we moved to Ohio and took our first church. And finally, we were down in Georgia about 30 years ago, 35 years ago. And we were eating at an Olive Garden restaurant. And one of the people sitting next to us said, I think that is Michael Keaton talking to me. We had our four boys with us. Tim was there, our oldest son. Michael, our middle son, was there. And Matthew, our youngest son, was there. And so Kay looked at Michael, our middle son, and said, Michael, will you pass me the bread? And the lady sitting next to us said, I told you, that is Michael Keaton, for sure. And so I was 40 by then. And so my sons were going to start selling cars at the used car lot. And so I went to the auction with them several times. And when we went to the Atlanta auction, the very large auction, they said, look, you have to get a pass to get to the line to see the automobiles. And so they took a picture of me, and I'm filling out the application, and the lady looked over at me, and she said, has anybody ever told you that you look just like Clint Eastwood? And I said, no, but make my day. And then about 10 years ago, now I'm 60, I was preaching at a Baptist Bible Fellowship meeting in Georgia, and I came out of the pulpit, and Mr. Carter was right here. And he said, Vic, has anybody ever told you that you look just exactly like Don Knox? I said, that ain't even funny. We change. We change. I was told by people that when we're 30, we're probably at our very best for good looking. So you can look around. Are you over 30? I could tell. You're leaning toward ugly right now. You know what I mean? I don't mean that in a bad way. But the bottom line, we go through a change. God doesn't go through a change. He's everlasting. He always was. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. So he simply says in verse number 12 that he is everlasting. Number two, he says, O Lord, my God. That little phrase there, Lord, my God, simply says that God is self-sufficient. They didn't have to charge him up on creation day. You had to just understand that he was actually God in creating the universe. He had all of the authority. What is it that the poet said? I once was a tadpole long and slim. Now I'm a toad with a toad tucked in. I'm now a monkey swinging in a tree, soon to be a doctor with a PhD. And that's the poet, whoever said they wanted to hear a piece of poetry. But the bottom line on the thing is, he simply says, look, he's actually not only everlasting, but he's self-existent. Number three, he's holy. But we've lost this, the reverence that we should have for God. I can tell you, when you stand in front of God, you're not going to wear your short shorts and crack your double bubble and tell God how cool it is to have him as your best bud, because he's holy. And then number four, I think it is, he says, he's, O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment, and O mighty God, the power and authority that God has, because he really is sovereign of the universe. And then in verse number 13, he says, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devour the man that is more righteous than he? Here's what he says. Finally, he says, look, I want you to know that God is faithful. So here he is out here in all of this perplexity.
not understanding all that is going on. And he said, in the midst of this, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to back up to what I understand. God is eternal. God is self-existent. God's got all of the authority that he wants. God is all-powerful. I'm going to step back on that. I'm going to watch the political world as the Babylonians come in. We already heard about them in October 7th, 2023. We know how vicious and vindictive they can be. By the way, at the risk of being critical, that's their heritage. That's their DNA. And so for us to sit on the sideline and simply say, look, God is just going to allow all of this to happen without repercussions is naivete, isn't it? Couple passages and I'll be through. I think for you and me, before we go to 2 Timothy chapter number 3, I think for you and me as pastors, missionaries, Sunday school teachers, laymen sitting in the church, supporting ministry, listen, we forget sometimes that laymen, whether you realize it or not, your pastor or missionary, when they stand in front of you on Sunday morning, need your prayer life and your support in order to accomplish the ministry that's there. Are you so naive that you would think that we could do this work without the authority and power of God? And so I've got to hurry. 2 Timothy chapter number something, 3. And verse number 1. Paul is writing to his young cohort. You need to know this if you didn't already know it, that this is his last letter that he'll write. Actually, it's 2 Timothy 4 and 1. This is his last letter. He's going to the headsman to lose his head. He'll be done. Ministry is finished. You do not see Paul in anxiety about what he's been doing. He says later on in this chapter, when you come to visit me, Timothy, the coat that I left at Troas with Carpus, would you bring that? And the parchments. I've got some more writing to do. The membros. I've got some more writing that I need to do. Will you bring those? And then he gives young Timothy the admonition that all of us as believers and all of us as pastors need to hear. Here's what he says in verse 1. I charge thee, therefore, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing, preach the word. The kerygma is the word. You remember the guy Caruso? This is, somebody said that's the root of his name. Preach the word. Be instant in season and out of season. The imminent return of the Lord could be here at any time. Somebody said, you know, when Jesus came the first time, look how vile and vicious the world was. The Roman government was in charge. Now, there was peace if you signed off with your God or gods at that particular time. But now then that believers came along, they said, listen, we will not bow to the king. And they're going to lose their life outside of Jerusalem for miles. There were the bodies of young men and some women hanging on crosses because they said, we will not surrender territory to the devil. So he says, look, I want you to be instant, in season and out of season. For the time will come when they shall not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. But watch therefore in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of thy ministry, for I am now ready to be offered and the time of my departure is at hand. He said, listen, Timothy, you have an obligation not to preach just sociology, but to preach salvation. You're not just to talk about the economics, but you're to talk about evangelism. You're not to just talk about reform, but redemption. You're not just to talk about the culture, but conversion. You're not to talk about progress, but pardon. You're not just to talk about a reorganization, but a new creation. You're not just to talk about what would go on in the world. You're not talking about the government. You're talking about the gospel. You're not talking about civilization. You're talking about Christ. You're not talking about biology and botany and biochemistry. You're to preach the Bible.
And so all of us have a responsibility to do that, regardless of where we are. And so the time is short, isn't it? For you and me to do what we do. When I think of my friend Brad, the young man with the old hair, every time I come up here, I always think of your church and the light that it is on the hill. Because it's on the hill if you're too drunk to know that. I mean, what an opportunity. We have to do ministry and accomplish something for God. And it's down in the trenches that that happens. So my friend Habakkuk is putting this together. Timothy is listening to this. Others in the Old in the New Testament, when and I'll be through. Titus chapter 1, I think it's verse 11 and 12 and 13. Titus, the other young friend of Paul, is going to plant a church on Crete. It was evidently a disgusting place to work. And so Paul reminds Titus, don't forget, one of their own, one of the Cretans, said they are liars, deceitful workers, and slow bellies. I said, they must be Democrats and Republicans. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just suggesting to you that we live in an environment that says that, you know, Jesus could come again at any time. And he could, couldn't he? We had somebody singing here when we started tonight. Would you be offended if we did that song right now? Hey guys, come on up. And Debbie's going to come down. I want you to sing Until Then with us. I think we've got some words. David has those. You know, we've got an obligation to get the gospel out. I do about 40 funerals a year. And Kay says, you know, hon, I guess people are just dying to hear you. I had a funeral Saturday for a guy that was 37 that overdosed. His widow was there. And two little children. Last January, I had a three-week span where I had 25 and 27-year-olds. There was three or four of them, I guess three, that were young. You know, preaching the gospel, the urgency of what we do becomes significant for us, doesn't it? This song really says so much of it. An encouragement for those of us that are in full-time service, for laymen that says, you know, I've given my money, what is the point? Fact is, if you're unable to give, you can pray.